Dana Carvey and David Spade here.
You might know our podcast, Fly on the Wall, featuring guests from across the entertainment industry.
We decided to do a spinoff called Superfly, and it's fun. It's just two of us riffing on current events, pop culture, catching up, impressions.
Joe, Trump's trying to be a dictator. Yeah, she says, bump on the tater tots. Joe, no.
Listen to and follow Superfly on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.
We learn from the past, take action in the present, and impact the future. Ford honors African Americans who've made significant contributions in science, tech, engineering, and math. Ford is working towards empowering Black youth to continue innovating within these fields. And giving thanks to individuals who've helped Ford create automotive icons like the Bronco SUV and Thunderbird. Ford is proud to sponsor education initiatives that encourage future Black leaders. Our purpose is to help build a better world where every person is free to move and pursue their dreams. Ford pays tribute to Black history, our shared present, and an equitable future for all. Built Ford proud.
We learn from the past, take action in the present, and impact the future. Ford honors African Americans who've made significant contributions in science, tech, engineering, and math. Ford is working towards empowering Black youth to continue innovating within these fields. And giving thanks to individuals who've helped Ford create automotive icons like the Bronco SUV and Thunderbird. Ford is proud to sponsor education initiatives that encourage future Black leaders. Our purpose is to help build a better world where every person is free to move and pursue their dreams. Ford pays tribute to Black history, our shared present, and an equitable future for all. Built Ford proud.
Hey, I'm Roy Wood Jr. Welcome to Beyond the Scenes, the podcast that goes a little deeper into topics and segments that air originally on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah. Today, we are discussing a hot topic. You know that Super Bowl is coming up. We are discussing racist sports team names, especially the ones that are appropriating Native culture. So, you know, the Washington football team changed their name to something different. So we're going to break that down today. I have two guests to help me do that. The first one, this brother is a friend. This brother is a friend, and I've been a fan of his work for a long, long time. He is a sports journalist. He has a show coming to HBO a little later this spring that's going to focus on the intersection of sports and race and gender and politics and economics. The show is called Game Theory. His name is Bo Money Jones. Bo, how you doing today, brother?
Oh, good, man. How are you?
You got a little energy in your tank to talk racism. I know you've been talking a lot of Black racism. We got to talk different racism.
It got cracking on February 1. It's going to be a doozy.
Also joining us today is the founder and executive director of Illuminative. It's a nonprofit organization that is focused on increasing Native and Indigenous visibility all across the spectrum, not just sports, but also entertainment, politics, all of that. She is a citizen of Pawnee, Crystal Echo Hawk. Crystal Echo Hawk. I said it right the first time. I was doubting myself. Crystal, how are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm glad to be here with you guys. Thanks.
Thank you. So let's just dive right in. Crystal, I'd love to start with you. You know, the Washington football team, they changed their name to the Commanders. You know, what is your feeling? Let's just start right here. The day that you found out that the Washington football team had decided to just drop the original name and go, hey, give us a couple years, we'll figure it out. But for now, we won't carry that name anymore. What were your thoughts and feelings on that?
I mean, it was really emotional. Everybody kind of remembers back like Dan Snyder saying never, you know, print that capital letters, underscore, this is never happening. And, you know, this has been a fight that's been happening for decades. I mean, starting back in the early 60s, right? Suzanne Harjo really was one of the first person to really put this forward about, you know, the team dropping this dictionary defined racial slur. So that gives you a sense of the arc of how long and how many generations have been fighting this, you know, vicious battle. I mean, we were told by pollsters going back into 2017 and 2018, you will never win this mascot battle ever. Americans aren't behind Native peoples on this. And so to see this moment fast forward to July 2020 and the announcement, it was incredibly emotional for so many Native peoples across this country.
When we talk about allyship, you know, and that announcement from, you know, Washington football team owner Dan Snyder came, you know, on the backside of the Black Lives Matter movement. Bomani, how much do you feel like that movement, and I don't want to say helped, but in terms of just collectively as a country, we just all just put our foot down and just went, yo, we're not taking this. And matter of fact, here's a couple other things that need to change. Matter of fact, Cleveland Indians, y'all change y'all shit too. Can we talk a little bit, Bo, just about what are some of the ways, you know, and Crystal, I'd love to get an answer from you after Bo on ways that Black people can be supportive of causes like this, or the ways that one group is able to draft off of another?
Well, the way I think it helped on this one that I think was interesting when Washington made the decision to do this, and it was the same thing I felt about the state flag in Mississippi. We wasn't even really talking about that. Right. Like, you know, like, no. like it out of nowhere, the Washington football team just popped up. It was like, you know what? Time for a change. We're like, really? After all this kicking and screaming and his foot stomping and everything else, you just popped up and just decided you were going to do it. And I think that something that happened with those names with regard to this was a big part of the refusal to change these names. To me, it's just always been about white people just not letting nobody tell them what to do, because it's not as though the Washington football team changed the name and a single solitary person, whoever said, I'll never watch them again, but they changed the name. Not a single one of them stopped, right? They got all kinds of other reasons not to watch that sorry football team. But every time somebody swears up and down, they ain't never going to go back. They ain't going to do anything else with one of these teams. They change the name and the people stay, right? Like, there's nothing to be lost. There's no money to be lost. They just don't like being told what to do. We've seen this come up in all these different ways. And so I think after George Floyd, it led to kind of a broad look for a lot of corporate entities at a lot of things that they did. And I also think it was an opportunity for a lot of those entities to get out in front, right? Like, you can make the argument in Mississippi, they took the flag down before somebody else did it for them. And that was, I thought,
to maybe look progressive. Yeah,
but that was what I thought was the most interesting part, because people have really, really, really been fighting for this for a very long time, and they just turned a deaf ear to it. And then one day, this dude who swore he'd never do it, under a measure of duress from a number of angles, just said, here's what I'll do. I'll just go ahead and change the name. Didn't even have no name. That's how you know they didn't have a plan. They were just like, all right, something's going to change today.
They was like, Prince, we will be a symbol for a while.
And I approved it. Like, that was about, like, if you were going to wait till you got the perfect name, you were never going to do it. That was the one thing I gave him credit for. It's like, it's got to change to what? Something else. What about nothing? Something else. Nothing works. Cool. Boom. Changed.
Crystal, this has always been an interesting, I would say, as a Black person growing up in Alabama, racism is a very insular experience in that you are focused on your people and your struggle and your fight and your fight. And it wasn't until I got to Tallahassee, and I went to Florida A&M, and we would go over to Florida State to do a little bit of drinking from time to time with, you know, with the folks over there. And we would see members of the Seminole Nation protesting outside of Doak Campbell Stadium. And that was really one of the first times, you know, talking to a 17-year-old, where I was really being open to everything else, that things that I had never thought about. And, you know, and I came up in the 90s, tomahawk chop, all of that nonsense. And so how can other people of color that are not part of your community make sure that we're supportive in a way that doesn't erase your fight or step in front of your fight? Because that's the thing that Black folks, but money know what I'm talking about. When it, you know, you go to a Black protest, it'd be too many white people like, wait a minute, white lady, let me stand in front of you now.
Same thing in a Native protest. Right. Well, I mean, I want to go back to something that Bomani said and like really recognize, I mean, like this, you know, this fight's been going for decades. Right. And I think that's the majority of Americans just thought this was because of George Floyd that this happened. No, you know, decades long, but it was unfortunately his death. Right. It launched this perfect storm that it all of a sudden, you remember the brands, Aunt Jemima, everything started falling. And I'll never forget the day on that blackout Tuesday. And the team was like, we stand against systemic racism. And it was AOC and then Congresswoman Holland that called the team out. And it just launched a wave. And right then at that, simultaneously, there was a Native organization that was started organizing those $620 billion worth of investors. Right. Mm-hmm. That came in and started really, like, that was the nail in it, that, you know, Snyder knew, you know, that's it, under duress. Right. This was not that they were willing to do it. So I just want to, like, you know, just, it's George Floyd, you know, on so many levels. And we, you know, it just has such a special place in our hearts as Native peoples and in like our, his family, and just like really thinking about that moment. But I think it just set this moment where increasingly, I think hopefully as people of color, we're starting to see each other more and about where our struggles connect, you know, around this. And I think that was just like the key thing is like really understanding since 2020 more is this conversation about systemic racism and other in the ways that it's beginning to impact all of us. And I think it's really been an opportunity to start to educate, you know, lots of allies and people of color that the R word is the N word to us, right? Mm-hmm. And that I think there's like such a deep psychology in this country about playing Indian and the conquest, like that even when we shout from the rooftops, this is racist, we don't want this anymore. People are like, no, you don't even know your own mind. We're honoring you. Like, I, you know, and I watched yesterday with the Washington announcement, they released a video yesterday. They said the R word probably 24 times in their new video announcing the new name. And it was like really this dog whistle. And I just thought, you know what? What if they had said the N word 20 times in that same video? Nobody would have stood for it. But yet yesterday, you know, it was just showing that the team, I don't think on is clearly not taking this seriously. They have not learned their lessons if that was part of their rollout. And so I think it's, you know, it's frustrating, but I do feel like we've really begun to make headway and where people are beginning to really understand this issue and where Native peoples are coming from more.
So to that point, Crystal, Bomani, just to show how ahead of the curve you've been on talking about this problem in professional sports. God, what was that? 5-6 years ago where you wore the Caucasian shirt?
April of 2016.
Yeah. The Cleveland's team, before they changed their name to the Guardians, you somehow, I don't know where you procured a whitewashed face of Cleveland's mascot, and you had on a shirt that had the Cleveland Caucasians, and boy, they was mad at you.
So we need to address the elephant in the room. Your t-shirt is dominating the social media conversation right now amongst our viewers. What motivated you to wear it?
It was clean. Like, I think number one, the fact that it was clean was a good start. The other part is I really like the shirt. I think it's funny. It's like, it's just like the Cleveland Indian shirt, like exactly the same as the Cleveland Indian shirt with just one small change.
Yeah.
That's it. This is the same thing that goes on with the logo for the Cleveland Indians, right? Yep. So like to have a problem with the logo of this would be to have a problem with the Indians. But if you're quiet about the Indians and now you got something to say about my shirt, I think it's time for introspection.
It was brilliant.
What point were you, because you weren't even on the show that day to talk about baseball.
No, I was
talking about some other stuff.
Yeah, I wasn't even trying to prove no point, though. Like, that's the thing about it that was so interesting to me, because I'd had that shirt for a long time. Like, I'd worn it in public. Like, it wasn't like I have a shirt for this very occasion, right? I was like, oh, this shirt's funny. The point to me was obvious. Like, I didn't think I was, because people have been saying these things for so long, I didn't think I was offering anything deep or profound, right? Like, I wasn't hitting anybody with anything that they hadn't heard before. To me, it was just a funny shirt. That was all it is. Like, I am absolutely not a hero on this because I did not do the math and realize what it might turn into when people saw it. And so as much as we talk about people being mad about it, kinda, right? Like, I didn't have any problems at work. Nobody gave, the only talk they had with me was like, look, it's the shirt is dominating the show and that's a problem. So if you could zip your hoodie up around it, which I thought was a reason, but I thought that was a reasonable thing to say. Like, if you're producing a television show and one thing is taken away from the actual television show, then okay, I've done this for an hour, right? Like, I get it. I'm not going to fight you about it. And so I went ahead and did that, but it was a lot of people, rather than saying they were mad, a lot of, I'm not mad. You're not owning me. You thought you were going to make me mad, but no. I'm not over here mad. I'm like, bro, I wasn't even thinking about you. So like, maybe they were mad, but one thing I felt like I learned in that is we give too much country to the loudest, angriest people. Because overwhelmingly what I got in response to that was support. Like, the significant majority of the people that I heard back from were like, whoa, this is so cool. Whoa, this is so cool. Whoa, thanks for standing, like all that kind of stuff. I think the negative stuff was actually a minority and probably a small part of it. Like, I think there was actually a bit more popular support behind this because in the end, people just don't really care. Like, that was the problem, is that having a Native mascot, they didn't even give that any thought. Like, to them, it's not an overt oppressive act. It's just like, oh, we want to make this the name of our team. And if they didn't do that, they name it after an animal. And yeah, it's really problematic that they see those two things as being the same. But I don't think that Americans have a real passion about it. Like, this is much more about the kind of passive racism that exists and that people just let slide because it's what they've always done. Like the football team in Washington, the part that nobody talks about is they are historically sorry. Like if you're my age, you remember when they won those three Super Bowls, but that's basically the only time they've been good. And they were the longest segregated franchise in the NFL. And subsequently, one of the worst franchises in the NFL for basically up until like 1970. They had two good coaches. So my point being, this name is actually attached to far more losing than it was ever attached to winning. They were just holding on because they, God forbid, they let anybody else tell them what to do.
I wonder what it would be like, though, if you put that Caucasians t-shirt on right now again, because it is next level now from when the first, when you did that first time to now and where people. No.
That guy who makes those shirts has a picture of me up in his house. Because that show
that
I was
picture.
On. Yeah, because that show that I was on aired it from 6 to 10 Eastern. And so he wakes up at like 7 o'clock or 7:30 and he's like, huh. Let me go see if we got any orders in overnight. Whoa! And it just completely, like, and I promise, I really didn't think that this was going to happen like that. I was just sitting it there blissfully unaware.
Brilliant.
And then it was like, oh, this is a thing.
So, Crystal, to Bomani's point of just how conversations grow and a groundswell starts, it may have, the germination may have been one thing, but it blows up into something else. Mm-hmm. Talk to us a little bit about Illuminative and what you all do, because this is a much bigger discussion than sports. When we're talking about discrimination and the perpetuation of stereotypes against the natives, what does your company do to fight some of those stereotypes? Just talk a little bit about Illuminative for me.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, Illuminative is founded on research, right? And I think it was just, you know, I've been an organizer, activist my whole life, you know, working in Indian country. And I think just throughout life and talking to so many different Native peoples, like we constantly feel like invisible, right? We're not showing up anywhere. People aren't taking us seriously. And if we, you know, when we come out on anything, it's like we're reduced to a caricature. So we did this research to really look at, you know, what are the dominant perceptions and narratives that Americans have about Native peoples? Why do they have these perceptions and how do they affect the way that Native peoples are treated? And so what we found is that nearly 80% of Americans don't know anything about us, right? And depending on where you live in the country, there are pockets of this country that aren't even sure if we exist anymore. Because if you're not in proximity to a reservation, right, then you're just in, then we're not represented in media. Our representation in media is less than 0.4%. Right. And 90% of schools in this country up until very recently, you know, don't teach about Native Americans past 1900. So yet literally Americans are almost conditioned, right, coming out of K through 12. And then when you don't see us in the media, you don't see us in TV and film, that we cease to exist, certainly as a contemporary people, right? We exist in the past. And in what little representation that kind of ekes through is typically pre-1900, if it's TV and film, you know, and people can literally have a very hard time conceiving of Native peoples in a contemporary context. So as we began to learn that and really unpack that, we realized, you know, working with a lot of social psychologists and people looking at certain things, that it affects the way that we're treated. It really perpetuates discrimination and racism against Native peoples to think that we don't exist. We're out of sight, out of mind, and the few things that kind of condition to, you know, inform the way people think about us are things like racist sports mascots. Like Nielsen did a poll last year. 56% of the fans polled said that the only time they see anything related to Native peoples is if they're watching, you know, one of these teams with their mascots, right? And that's people in red face, turkey feathers, acting a fool that has nothing to do with really Native cultures and Native people. So, you know, we realized, you know, with this research that that representation truly matters. That is not just a catchphrase, right? Because the way that we show up and presented, you know, in the world really conditions the way that we're treated, and not just in day-to-day life, the way the courts treat us, Congress treats us, you know, the way that our children are treated in school. So really Illuminative fights to, you know, fights against systemic racism and fights against the erasure, right? We fight against these toxic stereotypes and false narratives, and we really work to amplify who Native peoples are today and our issues, our points of view, and in key spaces like pop culture and media and also politics.
Yeah, like I'm trying to think, Bo, you know, and granted, this is an Alabama school system, pre-CRT. Native representation in history is Thanksgiving and cowboys and Indians. And I think after that, it's just a mystery what happens to Natives after that. Like there's not much. And then in TV, it was always you're the sidekick or you're the magical Yoda type, go here and here's some wisdom. Now go forth and go do the thing that you need to do.
Yeah, like the native homie in the crew just doesn't come up on a lot of television shows. You know what I mean? No. Like, but that's the thing that, you know, when you talk about a representation, like, you really get to a point on this stuff where somebody's just there and that part of them is not a plot device. You know, it's not like something we're going to go to for a joke all the time. And I think it's one of those things that's easy for people to not think of. And I think the point you made, especially depending upon what part of the country that you live in, where you're just not going to encounter native people. And it can be what part of like a county that you live in. Like I think of a place like Palm Beach County in Florida, for example, that as you're getting toward the beach, you have no idea that the west side of that county is a lot more native than you would have thought of, right? And the worlds kind of don't meet and don't come together. And that's a significant part, I think, of the problem that you have, is that it is very easy to think of Native Americans or Native people, excuse me, as just like history. Because like you talk about in school, I know it came up in our Texas history class in seventh grade, you know, because they had somebody was here, right? Like they had gotten past the point acting like they showed up. And it was like, wow, look at it. Pick it, whatever desk you want, right? Like it wasn't one of those.
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover.
Inside the house, there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God, this is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, the Hargan family killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, the Hargan family killings, starting May 8th, wherever you get your podcasts.
Situations, right? Like they at least acknowledge that part. And then you get to Trail of Tears and they're like, oh, done with that. Like when you, I'm willing yeah. to bet that if you ask most people about what they learn in history, it is the Trail of Tears is where it stops. But think about like metaphorically what that means. We are saying we got them up out of here and there's nothing left to discuss.
Exactly. Exactly.
After the break, I want to talk a little bit more about the Washington football team and the Cleveland Guardians and what they got right and wrong in their transitions. And also, Chris, I want to talk to you about some of these other teams that are still holding it down Dan Snyder style and saying we ain't never changing. Racism today, racism tomorrow, racism forever. I'm not sure if that's how they said it, but that's basically
that's so Alabama. What so Alabama. You broke out a George Wallace quote. Well, I would love to see somebody like do a series because every Southern state has their George Wallace. It's like it's a different person in every one, like the one standout racist.
Strong, right? Thurman
like,
ass.
Right, like, right, right. Georgia has Lester Maddox. I mean, it's a hell of a competition in Mississippi. I don't know who ultimately becomes the champion in that battle royal. Texas like that, too. Texas ain't got one. We've got we had a Royal Rumble in here.
This is Beyond the Scenes. We'll be right back.
Roses are red.
She shot him 6 times.
And violets are blue.
It's almost like her dream man came into her life.
Are you looking for love?
I'd do anything for you.
And a little murder, too?
She would kill her own daughters to get away with it.
He has a weapon. Drop the gun!
In honor of Valentine's Day, listen to Crazy in Love the entire month of February on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What can I say? Love made me crazy.
Did you know that on the day Dr. King was shot, the all-black security detail, normally assigned to him, was called off?
They're the ones who would not allow him to stay at any hotel with balconies. That security union was reassigned.
There was a man there who had just gone in, and there was a contract on my life that I was to go home.
Did you know that on the day Dr. King was shot, two black firemen stationed across the street and one black police detective who was surveilling King were all taken off the job?
What was the emergency that caused you to be moved to another fire station?
Sure, there was no emergency.
Chief Wallace, did you ever ask what this was all about?
Yes.
And then what were you told?
Told that I had been threatened.
This is the MLK Tapes. The first episodes are available now. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Crystal, I'll start with you. How do you feel about the new name? Commanders. We're the army. And we're in charge. You know, the same army. that told them Indians to get on out of here. Like, what did they get right? What did they get wrong during this supposed 2-year learning period and reflection and studying and speaking with members of your community?
Well, I have to say I'm enjoying all the memes. I mean, it's just been hilarious, like gut laughs rated at people's reactions to the name. And, you know, I'm kind of like, whatever. I mean, at this point, I think we were just so focused on the team not having coming up with a name that had anything to do with Native peoples, right? So, I mean, honestly, I could care less. I mean, that's for the Washington fans and everyone else to litigate and laugh at, you know, the commandos. I mean, everybody was enjoying all the things yesterday. What did they get right? I mean, I think they definitely did go talk to Native people, right? Like dozens, you know, a couple dozen Native peoples. And I think they did focus groups. The team met with us last spring. Right. And, you know, I think that I felt like they heard us. Right. And just kind of people, you know, and even knowing where some of the options they were looking at around wolves and different things. I mean, they really did have some conversations and I felt like they listened. Right. Just stay away from a bunch of things. And like, you know, so whatever direction they ended up in with this military thing, I mean, that's a whole next level discussion, you know. Right. I mean, but I mean, I think finally, you know, I can tell you up until the last minute, Native peoples were holding their breaths because we just don't trust them, right? Like, what are they going to pull? And so I think we were, you know, relieved it had nothing to do with this. But again, watching the rollout yesterday and seeing that video, I had a former reporter send it to me last night, like fit to be tied. I mean, it was this dog whistle and it was kind of this wink, wink, nudge, nudge to the fans around that name. And it's just like really showed that, you know, internally in that organization, they still don't get it. They still don't get that this was like the most disgusting racist term ever and the harm that they created. And so, you know, they're on my call list today to kind of like, you know, on the one hand, you're telling Native peoples this, but here's your actions. Again, there's just clearly some things in that inside that franchise that have not changed. And, you know, and I think that they got a lot more to do. They haven't apologized. And if you actually look at so much of the announcement and rollout, there's really no recognition, right? They just sort of dance around why they had to actually change the name. It was like, you know, now like, oh, we wanted to do this almost, right? And kind of embracing it. And I think you look at all the Native leaders commenting yesterday saying, this is not enough. Where's our apology? Where's the apology to the activists that they harassed and targeted, like Suzanne Harjo and Amanda Blackhorse, right? I mean, disgusting, really vile, vicious behavior that, you know, there were like death threats against some of these activists, you know, and what are they going to do that 90 years of racism that they perpetuated, like overnight, everything's okay? No. And I think that's where, you know, Native peoples, Indian country is like, we're going to still work to hold this team accountable.
Well, I think in line with that, I think that there's something fundamental to like this team has historically believed, and this goes back to the 1950s and 60s with their segregation. They have historically believed that their fans like a little racism, right? Like the argument against integrating the team for George Preston Marshall was that our fans don't want black players on our team, right? They have made this guess, right? And I always wondered, anybody who swore they'd never watch that team again, if they ever had black people, then I think it's 17 years later, Doug Williams wins the Super Bowl with them. And I bet they were all sitting there watching, but they operate on this assumption that people like this. Like they believe that their fans think this is all better with a little racism. Again, it sure seems that whenever they change these things, the world keeps on spinning and nobody does anything. And so I've always wondered, like when they decide they're going to come up with a new name or what they were going to do, if they did in part feel like they had to give a little nudge to be like, don't worry, we're still with you, right? Like fundamentally the audience for them is white people. And I feel like race so often in this country, as is discussed by white people, between white people, is just kind of something to talk about. Like, you know, you root for this team, I root for this team. And in the end, we go home and we're all still friends. We just root for different teams because it don't mean the same thing to them. Like ultimately, when it comes down to it, it doesn't have the same gravity. It's not as serious, you know, when it comes in. And so that to me, I thought was a huge part of the Washington story that gets lost is a lot of this is on Snyder, as it was on Cook before him, as it was on the Marshalls before them. But at some point as fans, you got to stand up and just kind of be like, yo, why do y'all think we so racist? Or just say that you are, but they definitely think that you are. And if I say something about these people being racist, everybody want to come march about it. These teams tell you that they think you're racist and you're like, eh, a little bit, maybe. Gosh.
Was there the same feeling, Crystal, of insincere sincerity from the Cleveland Guardians when they changed their name? Because they got roasted too, because everybody's like, y'all done named the team after two statues that look over traffic. Kind of smelled like they didn't have a plan either, Bo.
I think they had a really different process, right? You know, again, I think than to Washington. I mean, again, you know, it's a whole other thing. I mean, I think, you know, for Native peoples, particularly people living in the Cleveland area, I mean, it was just a long, hard fought battle, and they were just relieved again, you know, to finally that the name was getting away from it. But it was a much more closed process, you know. But I mean, I just think it's just not the same level of vitriol. Right. And just, I mean, they were never as nasty as the Washington team and their leadership. Right. So I think it's just, you know, it's kind of looked at in a different way. I don't think with the same kind of distrust. And, you know, and I think today looking, you know, reading through all the social media around Indian country, people are pissed at the team. You know, I mean, even though we're relieved, it's just still like so evident that I don't think that they've really learned. And as you know, Monty, you put it right. I mean, that's their legacy. And if you watch the video, their legacy is nothing but showing the R word. And that is, I mean, it was really like, oh, wow. It was a wink, wink, you know, nod to that. And it's you know, the NFL, as we know, has a little bit of a racism problem. And there's the understatement.
Well, Chris, I'm curious about this with Cleveland, because to me, you know, I'm speaking from obviously a bit of a comfortable distance. And like when I hear Indian like I hear colored, right? Like it's an antiquity that's born in a bunch of stuff, but not a slur in the same way as we talk about these other things. The thing with me with them was always Wahoo, which, by the way, they had, if you don't know, they have evolved. There's been various forms of Wahoo. This form of Wahoo, the last one of Chief Wahoo, the mascot they had, is actually progressively less offensive than like the two or three incarnations that had come up previous. Like they had held on. That was always the one where I'm like, you got this thing on the hat. You can't do that. Like that was always the most
Mohawk and everything.
Yeah, that was always the most indefensible part. And then that last year when they looked like they might almost win the World Series, they had one of the old timers from the 1948 World Series team come back, and he had one of the antiquated Cleveland Chief Wahoo, and I was floored. It was the mascot as much as anything else that they held on. People were like, look, can you move on from this? Look, can you move on from this? Can you move on from this? And at points, it seemed at points that there would be times the leadership was like, yeah, we can do this because they can go sell new stuff. They were just so afraid of these angry fans. And what in the world are these fans going to do? And I'm like, do you know anything about Cleveland sports fans? Do you see the losers they have attached themselves to for decades? And you think they go quit you over this? Are you serious? But they just refused to let go of that part. And that to me was just, it was just always so striking that nothing was quite like that. Because I feel like, and I could be wrong here, but I feel like the best way to get people to not pay that much attention to your native mascot is if your uniforms are attractive. So the Chicago Blackhawks managed to dodge this in a bit of a unique way. They have very striking jerseys. Like, I'm not saying that they are not problematic. I am saying visually they are striking. The Braves have had those uniforms that they've been wearing now since 1987. You can't think of very many teams that have had uniforms the same without any fundamental change to them that long. Like, they found a design and they stuck with it. The Chiefs, same way. Somehow, now granted, their names are a little different. It's not, you know, it's not the same as the R word and all of these things. But those are the ones that get to skate. If we don't think your gear is hot, we're telling you that you got to get this stuff out of here.
You know, I think that's part of it, right? But I mean, just one point I want to make, like, I think a lot of times what people don't understand, and I'm glad you bring this up, is it's not always about the name. Right. I mean, like the R word, that's like, that was next level, right? And people are like, well, Chiefs, Braves, like Blackhawks, come on. What's Native people's problems here? And it is, it's about the imagery, right? But it's also about the racist sports fan behavior that starts spinning out from it. The red face, right? Red face is the equivalent to blackface, right? The turkey feathers, the drum, the tomahawk chop, all these things that mimic and mock Native peoples. It has nothing to do with anything related to traditional Native culture. So it's really this ecosystem that radiates out, even from a name that might not on face value look like it's offensive. It's the culture that radiates out, or the way that rival fans will use hate speech speech, right, when they're cheering against those teams, that ends up being hate, racist speech against Native Americans.
And Chris, I'll tell you something I didn't know. I did not realize until very recently that, like, sports teams that are the Warriors, that that was basically a euphemism for previous Native names. Like, I was on a Little League team when I was 9 years old that was called the Warriors, and it hit me one day. It was Navy blue with red letters across. We were the Cleveland Indians. I had no idea. The Golden State Warriors in basketball. I had no idea this one. They were selling the old gear on the website. And I looked at it, and you would be shocked if you looked at what it was. Like, it was just terribly savage Native imagery from like the 1950s. I had no idea that they ever had this era, because I did not think of Warriors in that way. And what was so funny about it was my producer on my podcast pointed it out to me. And I said, wow, and we talked about it on the podcast and sent a link out. All right, after he talked to me about it, I sent a link out on Twitter that was like, wow, I had no idea of this. Within, I want to say, a half hour, it was down from the NBA store. Like, wow. Nobody had noticed it. It was just literally nobody noticed it was there. And I was the one person to be like, yo, this is bananas. And then the link was gone. Like, they might still sell some of that stuff, but right fast, that link was gone because they had just been skating, and I had no clue that that was where all that started.
So then that brings me to this last question before we go to the break. Where does economics fit into this resistance to change, Bo? Because a lot of teams don't want to change because they think that the fans are going to be angry. Like, right now, the Chiefs are starting to get a little bit of pressure. And they said, like, I think, like, back in 2013, 2014, we are meeting with members of that community, and we are trying to make sure and figure out a way, and we are not racist. Just give us a little time to figure it out. But they hadn't done anything since any of those conversations. How much does the economic model of sports play into these teams believing that if they change, the fans will leave and we's gonna be broke?
Yeah, I don't think it's economics. I think it's just white supremacy, to be perfectly honest. Like, all the things that the NFL expects us to put up with at every turn, and they think that's gonna be the one to make people suddenly stop coming to watch these games, that don't make no sense, right? Like, they have told us over and over again that they believe that no matter what we do, don't you worry, the people gonna show up. As long as you sing the Star Spangled Banner before the game and show some love to the military, then people are going to come to the games. So they don't think really that this is going to stop. They might be mad for a little while, but they got no problem doing things that make people mad. Economically, my thought, and this is clear, unless you are like the Green Bay Packers or the Dallas Cowboys, and you have this brand that is just immutable and so strong that if you change it, it really like fundamentally alters the experience Yankee, that Lakers. People have with it. Yeah, like if you're one of those. Otherwise, you just change the name and sell more stuff and get more bread and then bring the other stuff back as a throwback if you want to and figure out some way to do that. Like, I've always thought that the economics would encourage a change in this. And no, I just think that they ain't about to let nobody tell them what to do. And what I thought was the most instructive thing about the period after George Floyd, look how much work we got done when we stopped caring about mad people. Right. It was a month and change where you didn't worry about.
Hi there, Rory Stewart and Alistair Campbell here, hosts of The Rest is Politics, the UK's biggest podcast.
I am the former director of communications and strategy to Tony Blair. And Rory is a former Conservative cabinet minister with an encyclopedic knowledge of foreign policy.
On The Rest is Politics, we don't just look at the British political scene. We lift the lid on the biggest stories from both at home and abroad. And we also interview the biggest political names every week, including Bill Gates, Hillary Clinton, Arnold Schwarzenegger, on our The Rest is Politics leading channel.
So just search The Rest is Politics wherever you get your podcasts.
But if it made white folks mad, and we got a lot done, and they didn't even actually get that mad.
I mean, that was January 6th, but other than that,
yeah. I mean, they didn't get madder, right? Maybe they was already on the red line, right? And there wasn't no place else for them to go. But they laid low for the summer of 2020. We was bought it, and they was like, let them have it. Let them get it out.
Crystal, why do fans hold on to this? Why isn't there something else that they could find that's less racist that represents their town? What does it say about people when they have an inability to just let go of something? Like in Cleveland, there's still artists that sell Chief Wahoo stuff. They like, I'm painting what I want to paint. You ain't gonna tell me what to do. What does that say about our society when people think that the identity of the team belongs to them and not to your people?
I mean, it just goes to show how, like, again, going back into the psychology of this country and like the deep, like, master meta narratives that are around this, it's like there's something about playing native. It's just such, like, it feels like an entitlement and a right. And it's like, it's about anything goes. It doesn't matter what Native people say. We do. You can come take our land. You can take our culture. You can take our women. You can take everything. And that is like a deeply embedded part of this nationalistic identity and white supremacy. It is, I mean, so many, you talk to any activist, Native activist that is working on these issues, at some point you have received death threats. You've received threats of violence. And it's just like, what? This is a damn sports team. This is like, seriously? You're getting, like, I got a threat this morning on Instagram. And it's like, what is it about this dude in Kansas that he's like, you know, losing his mind about this name change? And I think it really speaks to the heart of white supremacy, this white nationalist identity that unfortunately is just getting fed. And really getting bigger and bigger. And it's just, you know, it's stunning to me, right? But it is, it's a deep psychology of white supremacy, of which has a lot to do about conquering Native peoples and taking. That is just, you know, it's what we're fighting against constantly.
After the break, Crystal, I want to talk with you more about your research and the things that you all have planned for the future and around the corner. And Bomani, I want to talk with you a little bit about the same thing, because, you know, you have for a long time on a number of various platforms been trying to wield that sledgehammer of justice. And you already did. I didn't even know that story. I didn't know you cut off somebody's money on the NBA.com merch store.
It was gone.
So I know that there's a lot that you have to do as a member of the media in bringing these topics to light. And I think that you two, there's a synergy there. And I want to talk about what that struggle is. We'll wrap up on the other side of the break. This is Beyond the Scenes.
Hi, my name is Cassidy Zachary.
And I am April Callahan.
And we are fashion historians.
Yep. And co-hosts and the creators of the podcast Dressed, The History of Fashion, which is dedicated to investigating the significance of dress from throughout history and around the world.
And we are so excited to bring you a brand new season celebrating groundbreaking fashion figures and exploring the history of everything from corsets to blue jeans.
Dressed, The History of Fashion is available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you listen to your favorite shows. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
The Black Effect presents.
I didn't know. Maybe you didn't either. But the history of black people ain't rooted in slavery. Oh, no. It's royalty. Not despair. B Dot here. And every day in February, I will give you a black history fact that I didn't know. And maybe you didn't either. It's a rugged, ratchet, realistic look at history. Listen to I Didn't Know, Maybe You Didn't Either on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or just wherever you get your podcasts from.
We have had a very spirited conversation about Native imagery in professional sports. Crystal is here, and her company is Illuminative. And your company does a lot of, you do what people need now, because it's not enough to just go something racist. You got to have data, you got to have numbers, you got to have statistics, because then people go, oh, okay, now you telling the truth. See, I didn't believe you before from just being a member of that community. You got data. Talk to us a little bit about the future of your company and how you all are measuring. How do you measure what's wrong? And then how do you measure when you think it's changing? You know, what's the future look like for your company?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think when we think about the future of Illuminative, we're just thinking about the future of our Native peoples, right? And it's about how we're building power through representation. So, you know, despite everything that we've talked about Washington, right, that's a victory for Native peoples at the end of the day, right? As we start knocking these things down, but at the same time, like so much of the work that we have done is really to advocate, for example, in entertainment and media, right? About the need for more Native stories in TV and film, more representation across all facets of media. And so that's a really big focal point of our organizing, our advocacy, both like very outward facing, but also behind the scenes, right? Doing a lot of work inside the industry and really forging partnerships with studios so that we can see, you know, last year we had our first two ever Native American television shows. It's crazy it took this long to kind of hit that mark. But they were huge successes, right? So really looking at how we get more of those, you know, stories made and working with studios in that way. I mean, I think it's also a lot of advocacy across all facets of media, right? We still don't have any Native American commentators on any of the major, you know, cable networks, you know, major media outlets. So it's really, again, looking at that advocacy and creating opportunities, you know, for Native peoples, Native voices, and Native stories so that more people can see us and hear us and understand that Native peoples have a lot to say. We are doing a lot. We are contributing a lot. And it's really shifting that narrative so that, you know, Americans can really see who we are today and the ways that we're leading and innovating across this country.
What I love about shows like Rutherford Falls and Reservation Dogs, which are, I'm assuming those are the two shows that we're talking about, is that it doesn't, it's just people existing, and there's a plot and there's a story, and it's within a world that you may or may not know something about, but it doesn't come across as this is our story and it's time that you know exactly what is. And it's beautiful because it's an easier entry point for people to absorb stuff that they might reject, because let's be real, when you're trying to inform ignorant people, you got to hide the vitamin in the dog food, which Bomani, that's something that you are very often very able to do. That the Caucasian shirt is a perfect example of that. Like, you didn't come on to take a stand. It was just, yeah, I'm just wearing the shirt. I thought this was funny. It's irony. But everybody knows about this, right? You know what's happening, right? So when you approach racial injustice in sports, not in sports, but as a sports, as primarily a sports journalist, though I think HBO gonna force you out that box a little bit and let you start dibbling and dabbling.
I mean, I've been out that thing for like 20, but I feel you.
How do you approach covering racial justice in sports? Let's just keep it sports, since that's what this episode is.
Well, I don't think I have a strategy as much as the one thing I know is just don't make it personal. You'd be amazed the wide berth that you receive if you don't make it personal. Right. Like, that's once you start. And part of why I'm not inclined to make it but so personal is you actually, in many cases, minimize the overall point when you make it personal, because there are individuals that exist who certainly are racist. There's no question about that. Once you start focusing on whether or not, or calling that person racist, the discussion then becomes whether or not that person is racist. And that term racist is used by different people in different ways. There's like a very basic word that you can use, but see, once you start talking about it as it involves individuals, then you start getting to a standard that is beyond even a reasonable doubt, right? Like, people gonna require you to prove that to the 99th percent of confidence on that, and everything you say then ultimately winds up being derailed. Our biggest problem is not individuals. Our biggest problem is systems. Our biggest problem are the things that happen that you can't just point a finger at one person and say, hey, he's the one who did this. So for me, talking about systems and the things there, that isn't difficult, and it's not hard to get the room, you know, for people to be willing to listen. Like, I find that people are willing to listen to me go kind of hard, which is a bit surprising. But I think the reason is you just kind of got it. Like, for me, my brother told me something very early on in my career that has guided me. And he was like, a good argument is not one that a genius cannot refute. It is one a fool cannot refute. So I am going to talk to you right where you are. I'm going to come to directly where you are in as direct a fashion as possible, as polite a fashion as possible also, but as direct a fashion as possible. And then dare you to tell me to show me the lie. Show me the lie. And by and large, people have like been willing. I have been surprised over the course of the last 20 years how much listening to me people are willing to do on these matters. Some of them are lost causes, you know, but you can't worry about them. And I think that's the biggest part of it. The people you ain't never going to win over ain't the people you can be concerned with.
So as we wrap up here, Crystal, and we look ahead, there are a lot of franchises that, for the time being, seem inclined to keep their problematic names. Mm-hmm. Are there things that the casual sports fan, what can we do to help bring light to this? And I'm talking bigger than just Black people and other communities of color. I'm just talking about, if I'm a fan of the Braves or the Chicago Blackhawks, what can I do as a casual fan to try and bring light to these types of injustices?
I mean, one, lean in and get educated, right? Because I think what we find, you know, going back to my original statistic, 80% of people know very little about Native Americans. So one, it's just we see that there's still a lot of education and to understand why these things are harmful. And it's not always just the name. It's all the things associated with it. And then I think making our voices heard. I mean, I'll tell you this, you know, this last, you know, World Series, I was stunned by how many sports reporters actually were like, oh, we get this now. and started really challenging the team and its ownership and the MLB commissioner. Like it was a new dawn this last round in terms of coverage and the level of conversation, you know, about the history of Indian removal, you know, and genocide and you know, Georgia and all the things. Like it really kind of brought it in. So I think people, you know, social media is a powerful tool. And when people start turning up the volume, you lean in and start making your voices heard. The teams are tracking this stuff, right? And to really be part and parcel of joining that movement, because that's how we started getting it done with Washington and these other ones, right? They felt the pressure. So it's just really people getting educated. It's engaging in those conversations with your friends and your family, and then really being a part of turning up the volume and putting the pressure on these teams to make the change.
Yeah, and I think the World Series is a perfect storm too. It helps that the commissioner of Major League Baseball, Cornell degree or not, does not appear to be the brightest man in the world, because they took that All-Star game out of Atlanta because of the voting rights stuff that was going on there. Mm-hmm. And then when he got asked about that team name, he basically pulled the state's rights argument and said that this is a local matter and not something for us to discuss. And we all like, so was that voting rights bill, homie, but you packed up and moved because Delta and all of them told you we're not on board with this. And then you left. The hypocrisy was laid so bare at mm-hmm. that point that I think it did bring on a whole new challenge. And I hope something that people learn from that one also is never believe the natives that the team tells you speak for every other native. Like Dan Snyder had his on-call natives. Ooh. Whenever something would pop off.
I was just about to ask Crystal about
it. Oh, yeah.
On television, and the Braves got their on-call natives, and they have a casino deal with them, right? Because the Braves are corporately owned.
Eastern Band Cherokee. Yep.
Yeah, that's right. And so, like, if they are like, nah, come listen to them. If they not like, go listen to all of them, they're like, no, listen to these ones right here standing next to me. It's probably
this,
a con.
I too
guys.
Have a black friend, and this yes. is my native friend.
Yes, yes,
exactly,
yes.
Exactly. So, Chief Crystal, Sneed from Eastern Band got put on blast across Indian country for what he pulled down there.
I mean, I saw mm-hmm. a band of Black Horse once. I think I was on Outside the Line. I don't know if I was on. I was not on. I may have just been watching, but she was on with some whoever Daniel Snyder's on-call native was at that time, and just flat out asked him, are you being paid for this? Which I don't recall him answering. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. What's that conversation like internally? I know black folks, we normally don't get into it publicly because we call it family business. But what is that internal strife? Is there a lot of that strife within the native community of like, hey, could you shut the hell up? We're trying to get the name changed over here.
Oh, I mean, this time with what happened at the series, and I mean, he got put on blast publicly, the tribe did. And I was, I mean, like, I think there was a statement that came out of National Congress, American Indians saying things like natives for hire. I mean, the people, gloves came off, because it was so crazy that a tribe in the neighboring state said, no, this is, we're going to sign off on this. It's not, the tomahawk chop is not traditional to Eastern Band Cherokee or anybody else. This is an invention of Hollywood, right? And people's fantasies of playing native. So I think this is really people put the tribe, Eastern Band Cherokee, and whatever this smattering of natives that they found in the Atlanta area, that you do not get to make that decision for all of us and for our kids. And so people are over it. And I can tell you, like, more and more, especially as these younger generations of natives are coming up, they're done. They're done with these mascots and stuff. It's very generational. The older generationals were, you know, my dad and my grandparents and everybody above were cool with it. These younger generations, they're done. And so that's the shift.
Well, I wish that we had more time to really dig into this, but I feel like we got a lot accomplished today. I cannot thank you all enough for going beyond the scenes with me. Bomani Jones, the show is Game Theory, and that's premiering on HBO later this spring, maybe early summer. I do not know your production schedule, but I do know it is coming very, very soon. And Krista Echohawk, thank you so much. Thank you for all the work that you're doing with Illuminative as well to bring about change in this country and the elimination of the tomahawk chop as well.
Yes.
Thank you all for going beyond the scenes with me. Listen to the daily show Beyond the Scenes on Apple Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Joe Piazza, host of the podcast Under the Influence.
If you tuned into our last season, you know that the world of mom influencers on Instagram contains multitudes. Yes, there are pretty pictures and gorgeous kids, and yes, there's lots of money behind a lot of those pictures, but there is also something much more dark and complicated going on in the background. And that speaks to everything that is wrong with how we treat women in the world. On season 2 of Under the Influence, we're advocating for the women who make content and the women who consume it. We're going into some of the darkest corners of the social media universe, and we might just have a plan to shut it all the hell down. Listen to season 2 of Under the Influence with Joe Piazza on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What grows in the forest? Our imagination and our family bonds. The forest is closer than you think. Find a forest near you at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover...
Inside the house, there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God. This is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, the Hargan family killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, the Hargan family killings, starting May 8th, wherever you get your podcasts.